My name is Tom Bergman. I work for a company called Avid Technologies, which is part of WaltersKluwer.com. What I do isn't that important. I've been using Progress for a really long time. This presentation is on the .NET framework, and it's not about building a user interface. So this is a Microsoft description of what the .NET framework is. But really, it's a bunch of APIs you can use from all of the Microsoft languages. That's why they built it. But now you can also use it from Progress. There's hundreds of methods, classes, properties in the .NET framework. We're going to use a few of them and show you some common things you can use that basically just extend the Progress language. So Progress started doing this back in 10.2b. They built it so you could do .NET objects in your user interface, not so you could use all these other things that I'm going to show today. But those worked since they did it. In 10.2b, the only thing you could do it to was from the Windows client. In 11 plus, you can use any of the Progress executables, can use .NET features. So it's very nice. If you're not in 11, it won't do you as much good. Developer Studio, you can develop .NET code in any editor that you'd like, but it makes it a lot easier to use Developer Studio because it has code completion, syntax checking, and the class browser, which comes with Developer Studio, is very useful as well to get a starting point on many of the .NET classes. Data. When you're using .NET, you of course are going to be getting values back, giving values to your .NET classes. By and large, Progress does most of it just fine. You don't have to think about it. If .NET is returning a system dot, a float or a decimal, it'll go to the appropriate Progress data type just fine without you generally worrying about it at all. Binary data. A lot of times you want to do things with things like images or files or other things in .NET. In .NET, you can get almost any kind of object into something called a byte array. A byte array is what it sounds like. It's a bunch of bytes of data. It's pure data. In Progress, if you want to have something in memory that's binary, you would normally use a mem pointer. That's the only data type you have in Progress. Progress has not provided any ability to go back and forth between those two data types, but I'm going to show you a simple method that does that just fine. You're going to get that in the sample code if you ever download it. You could do it the awkward way, which is use some dot method, .NET method to write, let's say, an image to a file, and then you could pull it in using copylob into Progress and delete the temporary file, but it's really awkward and messy, and I don't recommend that. It's really important to, for me anyway, to try to do things all in memory and not be going out to the file system all the time. And you'll see those two methods. I'll show you those later in a utility that I've provided. Using. This is when you're writing a lot of .NET code, a lot of the classes and methods are very long-winded. So you've got a lot of characters to type. The using statement can get you into a class, so you can use it just by its basic name. So in this, I'm using the system class, so all I have to do is type in math. Here I'm using it without the using, I have to type in system.math. It's the same thing. When you're starting out, it's kind of nice to type it all in because then you remember what classes you're using and where they came from. As you get to doing it more and more, you really hate typing all that and you just want to use the using statement so you don't have to. A lot of times when you're going to try to do something.
So I got a quick question on that.
Sure.
Do you ever have any concerns about namespacing for
which one you'll actually hit?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, the order of your using statement makes a difference. You could have common named classes and methods. It's possible. It can be a conflict. It can happen. Then you just type the whole thing in. A lot of times when you're using .NET, your biggest tool is going to be Google. You're going to go Google something on how to do something. Type in, delete a file, .NET, C#, and you'll get thousands of examples, and some of them will even work. It's just like anything else you find on Google. You can find good ways and bad ways, and experience is the only way you can filter through that. But you end up translating from .NET into Progress. And I find the C# examples easier than the VB.NET examples, and there are more of them, but either one is not really that hard to use for translation purposes. So here's a simple example. I'm going to get used to these buttons. This is a .NET class that I found. I think it's in one of Microsoft's demos. And we're defining a method. It's returning a double. We don't have to pre-declare our variables in .NET, and it does something. And it returns what system.math does to that variable. This is the progress equivalent. We have to define our variable. Other than that, it's practically the same, except properties, methods, are all separated from the class name by a colon in progress and by another dot in .NET, because they like dots, because it's .NET. I guess that's the reason. There's a syntax in C# that you'll see a lot that's another, uses the word using, again, even though it's the same word we used for kind of getting to the classes. The using syntax is important to understand because sometimes the examples you translate won't work unless you have that understanding. Using scopes the object that's being created to within the block, and then the object goes away at the end of the block. In some cases, unless the object goes away, it doesn't perform its final actions. So in this example, I was working with zip files, and unless I had that dispose statement at the end, the zip file never got written. So you have to understand that the using file is doing more than just some sort of shortcut syntax in C#. It is controlling the scope. It also will dispose the object in an error and things like that, but that's, my experience, just not that important. There's a for each statement in C#, which is designed to go through a collection. A lot of times the objects returned when you're using something in .NET is a collection, which is just a list of objects. In order to go through the collection, you have to have some way of iterating through it. Mike from consulting work wrote a nice little include, and it's going to be with my code, and you can get it from him, that duplicates the C# syntax. So this is a C# example of doing something. We're going through all the errors that came back from statement, naming the objects returned, the individual object, compare, and it is of type compiler error. And then we do something. And if you use that include, the syntax is practically the same. If you look inside the include, you'll see it does a bunch of complicated stuff that you'd rather not write every time. Even though it's an include file, it's worth using for those of you that don't like include files. Casting. In the .NET world, there are a lot of different types of objects, and some of the objects inherit from others, so they may have more properties than their parent object. And a lot of times you need to get to the object with more properties to do the things that you want to do. So objects that have that inheritance hierarchy, and I don't want to make this an OL class at all, you sometimes need to turn them into other objects. So you'll see in C#, you'll see either of these two syntaxes. One, the actual type. So this method doesn't return by default an HTTP web request. I think it returns a web request, which is a slightly less specific version of the object. So this syntax turns it into an HTTP web request, or this syntax. You'll see both in C# examples. In progress, you have to cast it using the casting. Very similar, but the syntax is quite different. So you need to know how to translate that.
Does
C#
not have the cast?
I don't think C# has a cast statement. That's how they do it.
It's embedded. It's assumed. But when you use those braces, that's a casting.
Okay. I don't program in C#, so please correct me when I make mistakes. Enumerations. Enumerations are kind of like named constants if you've used ActiveX objects in COM and other Microsoft tools. But they're part of the language. And when you use them, you get your full syntax checking at compile time, and you get to do code completion to find out the appropriate values. In a simple statement like this, where we're saving an image, this is an enumeration. Image format is an enumeration. I'm picking the TIFF value in the enumeration. You can do it just like that, just like the C# syntax, with the exception of the colon. If you need to evaluate an enumeration to find out if it's equal to another enumeration, you have to use this little utility from Progress called enum helper. to find out. In this case, I'm using the R equal method. You can't use simple code like this. It will just fail to compile and not work. So Progress gave us that utility, which just makes the code harder to write, but I don't know why they couldn't have done it more simple. But that's what you have to do. Case sensitivity. Occasionally, it's case sensitive. I don't know why. There doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason, but this example shows you an example. If something just doesn't work and you're sure it should work, get the case the same as the example you're writing. That's my advice. Most of the time, it does not matter at all. I don't know why it sometimes does and sometimes. I have an answer.
The first reference to it has to be the right case. Once we know what it is and it's in the system, we can find it.
Thank you. I now learned something. That's great. First reference, that makes so much sense.
But you should do it always, because you never know what the first reference is.
Good point. Okay. Sometimes .NET class names conflict with Progress keywords. In the case of System.drawing, the color class name conflicts with the color Progress keyword. So you will end up having to spell out, or at least the only way I've found to use it, you'll have to spell it out. I don't know any workarounds for that. And I guess no one else does either. Having to conflicts with Progress keywords in class names. The class browser, this is just a picture of it. It's a very useful but limited tool. When you're trying to do something, you might want to, and you see the C-sharp example, you might want to immediately go to the class browser, look up the class you found in the C-sharp example, look at the Progress syntax examples, which are helpful sometimes. If you can't find it in the class browser, it's probably because it's not in your assemblies.xml file. Out of the box, you can use a portion of the .NET framework directly from Progress without doing anything about an assemblies.xml file. I don't know why some things are available and some aren't. Maybe I can get an explanation for that. But if you don't find it in the class browser, you will have to add a reference using the tools Progress gives you to the appropriate class. It's very easy to do. If you don't have an assemblies.xml file at all, you can add one either by letting Progress do it, by creating a form and adding something to it. It will create one for you. Or they have a tool that I mentioned here that you can go in and deal with it. But you will find that you'll be adding things to your assemblies.xml file regularly, because you'll be using classes that don't work out of the box. Other things you can look at. The two manuals that are labeled GUI for .NET from Progress are only about half GUI for .NET and contain a wealth of information about doing this and lots of useful details that aren't necessarily GUI related. So they're quite well worth looking at. Google, MSDN, and I did want to mention that there are, aside from what you get in the .NET framework, there are thousands of products you can download free for cost that do all kinds of cool things. So although you could probably write your own SFTP client using straight .NET code, you might be better off writing somebody, buying something from somebody who's already wrapped it and has lots of cool methods like cloning, keeping things the same. There's lots of things you shouldn't necessarily write from scratch, especially if you can buy something for $20 or for free. Okay, now we're going to get into nothing but code. And I do want to say that these code is it's a bunch of .p's and really ugly stuff. It's just for demos. So don't necessarily do it like this. Let me put my glasses on, because us old people can't see anything close anymore. And this. Okay, we're going to start with something very simple that shows off system.math. And I've defined a function that does roundup because there is a ceiling function in system.math that we don't have in Progress, but it works on an integer. So this little bit is just to let it work with different decimals. I'm going to calculate the volume as a sphere using pi. I realize you could just type pi in and it doesn't change very often. We're calculating some angles. So this is high school geometry. And the sphere volume is 10, is what it shows there. The angles are that. And this is what roundup does to those values. So some useful things, just it's just there, system.math. You just type it in and it works. It might as well be part of progress, assuming you're in Windows. Next example. Another very simple one, but something that I don't know how you'd do without .NET. This is going to figure out whether we're in daylight time or standard time and figure out what the name is of my local time zone. Very simple. But how would you do that? Have your own time zone table somewhere or something if you wanted to do this? I mean, it's just such easy stuff. I know progress is going to give us regular expressions. They announced it yesterday. However, you can use regular expressions right now. It works flawlessly. This demo does two things. It tries to validate an email based upon a pattern I found online. I can't write a regular expression to save my life, but I'm very good at searching with Google and cutting and pasting. And it's going to split a string. I had a need recently to split a string into its words for some strange, I don't want to go into what I was doing. So we have, this is a valid address, Bill Gates at Microsoft. I don't know if he'll get your email, but it's a valid address. And this split the string into six words, ignoring all the punctuation that was in the original string. If we change Bill's name to put two dots in, which is invalid, it will fail, as it should, and we still have six words. So we used regex split. That's the parameter that allowed it to split words. And the other one, we used this crazy expression that I found on a website, I mentioned where I found it, to validate an email address, and it seems to be very good. I mean, it's worked for us. We had a lot of problems when we were sending data to Salesforce because they validate emails. So we needed to validate them before we sent them to them in our system. It can be really important, especially if you just can't send them the data when you want to send them data. Okay.
The top, to see, I want to see how you define words. Is it just a...
It's a character extent with no specific...
Oh, okay.
Sorry, I should have shown that.
Where is the pattern variable is used?
Hmm? Pattern is what I'm setting over here.
Now, where is it used?
Oh, it's right there. Is match pattern. Sorry. I don't realize how narrow this is.
So the very expression pattern is not a constant. I mean, do you have to define that? Why did you have to define the pattern? That's not a constant somewhere.
You have to find, well, the pattern is what I defined here that I stole from somebody on Google somewhere.
Okay, I'm just surprised it wasn't a constant.
Hmm?
I just thought it might be a constant already predefined.
No, it's in this case you're using something you want to use a regex expression to match against. Okay, next. I mentioned zipping. There is code within .NET to zip. This example first deletes a directory and creates a directory so it's empty. Creates a zip file from a directory, extracts from that zip file into a directory. Then it opens another zip file, and we're going to add files to it one at a time. This dispose, I mentioned that earlier. And then I'm going to show you, using system diagnostics.process, I'm going to just open the folder to show you what's there. And then we're going to use the for each to go through the files that are now in the zip file. And we first are seeing... These are all the files that I zipped and unzipped. Doesn't really prove much, but they're really there. You'll have to trust me. And these are the two files I put into that. And some basic zip. Quite frankly, we use somebody who has a library that wraps it up much better. We've been using for a while for zipping, but it's now in .NET. I think it's a fairly recent addition. Okay. In progress, you have file info. In .NET, you have file info and system.io path. You have both. This is mostly showing system.io path, but I do something with file info at the end. And it just gives you a few more things than progress can do. I don't think progress has a get extension method. I don't think it has a get the name without the extension. You full path progress can do easily. There's a change extension method, which I find kind of nice. It just changes the name to have a different extension. You can get a temp file name, you can get temp path. This uses file info, and progress is file info being it returns an integer, which means you're limited to 2 to the 31st. So you can't find out that your swap file is 8 gig. So sometimes you run into progress deficiencies that you can work around very easily using .NET. I don't know if they're going to fix that or not. Processes. Sometimes you want to know what's running on a machine. You might want to do some things with it. Before I run this, I'm going to start a couple of notepads. And we'll run process demo. And I'll show you the code in a second. It found one of them named Notepad, and now it's going to get rid of it. It's going to get rid of the next one. I have no more notepads running. Just a simple call to get processes, puts it in an array, looking to see if you have it named Notepad, showing a few things about the process, and killing it. System diagnostics.process, the start method, which I used earlier to open a folder, is also a very good way of starting executables, and you can get back a handle to the executable. So much different than OS command. You can do things with it and track it and maybe get rid of it later. So there's a nice, I like process.
Quick question.
Sure.
I noticed that there's no undo. Is that just because
crappy coding?
Or is there things, are there cases where you shouldn't have a no undo?
Only if you should always have a no undo, okay, unless you want it to get undone,
okay,
which I think we have one line of code that needs an undo in our entire application. No, I just, like I said, this is not best practices.
Have you ever
wondered why progress doesn't include no undo by default?
That was mentioned yesterday in the 4GL info session. It's been mentioned at every info session I've been to for 20 years. I don't know. I'm not for progress. Okay. HTTP utility. Sometimes you have to work with things that you would normally only work with in perhaps web speed, because you're getting data from somebody else and you want to assemble a URL or less. The HTTP utility class allows you to do some of the common things like URL encode, URL decode, HTML encode, HTML decode, and you can parse a query string very easily. And we run it, and we see the original name is Smith & Wesson. Gets encoded to that, gets decoded to that. Original name had some brackets and quotes, gets changed to ampersand less thans and ampersand quote, and gets decoded again. And out of this query string, we pulled the last name with very, very simple code. It's a nice little thing. There's so many nice little things. Ah, this is one I really like. Parse dates. There's a number of date-time commands. One of them is called triparse. Triparse returns a logical, telling you whether it exceeded or not, and sets a variable with the value if it succeeds. So it parsed all of these dates except the last one, which has the wrong month year. It deals with that based on your system settings. But all of these different types of values that you might get in a text file or sent to you by somebody can be parsed into date times without thinking about it, without writing, you know, lots of string manipulation code and stuff like that. It's a really nice function. Active Directory. I don't know how many of you have to deal with Active Directory, but probably most of you. You want to validate somebody's credentials. I am validating locally because I'm not on a domain, but normally we would use the domain for our principal context. So I'm doing some usings here. We're using system.directory services and the account management subclass. And we're going to validate credentials on the test user on my system, and they're okay. And if I munch up the password, it's slower to fail, by the way, which I find interesting, especially when I'm on a local machine. I suspect that might be some sort of security thing, but I don't really know. Okay, Then there's another one using Active Directory where we get a property from a user. There are not that many properties on the local user, so the only one I got was description, but you have access to virtually everything in Active Directory. That's the description I put in for the user that I'm checking. I won't get into this code too much because it'll take too long, but you've got to all download this code. Okay, access to foreign databases. The demo I'm about to show is using the AdventureWorks database for Microsoft on my local PC. This all also works with Oracle if you get the right Oracle classes. So we're using a couple of things out of system, data and data SQL client. I'm defining a temp table for the fields I'm going to get back, creating a connection string. It's all connection strings are a challenge when you start doing this stuff. And I'm doing a select statement that I generated with some SQL utility, since I don't know how to write this shit. I'm checking the time, I'm opening the connection, I'm creating what's called a SQL command, and I'm creating a reader from the execute reader method of the command object. And then looping through reader.read and creating temp tables, and then messaging how long counting and messaging how long it took. This is all something you can do without .NET. There's lots of calm ways of doing this. It's very easy. We got 18,000 records back in about 2.2 seconds. Not bad. Okay, next demo is much more interesting. This using the same things, same connection string, a few different objects created. We're creating what's called a data adapter, and we need a stream reader and a memory stream to do some things with it. And we're creating we're going to use a .NET data set, and it's difficult in this presentation to distinguish between the .NET data set and the Progress data set that we will also be using. So we've got the same SQL statement, same connect string, same timing. We create a SQL connection. We create a data adapter using the connection. We create a .NET data set. We create a Progress data set. We run the fill command. This is the .NET fill command, and load the .NET data set. I think I did that. Naming the table. This is optional. We create a memory stream, which is a way to get the .NET data into something we will be able to use. We do a write XML off the data set, including schema information. All of this is like Progress code. I'm assuming Progress patterned their data sets off after .NET. Don't think it's vice versa. I'm not doing anything. We need a stream reader to read that stream. We read the stream to the end. And then we use the progress and get it into a long character. Then we use the progress method, readXML, to read it back into a progress data set. The rest of this code is to show what we got back. So we run this, and it was faster, 1.3 milliseconds. And we got back a buffer named ttperson. We got back 10 fields, and I'm just displaying some of them. So if you've been paying attention, you realize that you could easily wrap this up and pass a SQL statement, get back a data set. That's all. And have a program that does that. SQL data sets are a little different. They are one table, although if you pass two SQL statements, you'll get back two tables. They don't have the same sort of relationships, or at least not easily from a SQL statement that we get in progress. If there's a way to do that, I haven't gone that far and haven't figured it out. But it's very cool and easy. I'm going to talk about, I mentioned earlier that I supplied a little utility.
What are you looking forward?
I'll try not to lean forward. Can people still hear me? Okay, good.
I mean, not in the wires.
You can transfer it out to the other side. You're in the cable.
Oh. Just leave it right there. That's what we need, a good AV person. This utility that I'm providing contains methods for converting byte array to mempointer, compressing a byte array, compressing a mempointer, They all kind of use each other. Decompress, equivalent decompresses, and I threw one in there because one of my things shows some XML, and this will take raw XML in one line and format it, if anybody needs it. But it's things I needed for the demo. I'm not going to really go into how they work. In some cases, I don't really understand how they work. Really, we're going from managed memory, which is a byte array in .NET, to unmanaged memory, which is a progress mem pointer. But you don't need to worry too much about that. If you know how to deal with mem pointers, once you get into the .NET world, you'll have your byte array, and you can go back and forth between them. First demo of the .NET web client. Now, if you want to do things with REST or SOAP, and you don't can't or don't want to use Progress utilities, the web client can do almost anything. And this first demo is very simple. It uses the download string method, gets back a little data, and does a little work with the XML, and I'll talk a little about that in a second. So this is a portion of the XML we got back, and you can see we got back a formatted address, and the screen is too small to show most of the message. Okay. Real quick change. Okay. So we got back XML, we got back a formatted address, which is a lot better than what we passed it. We got back latitude and longitude. Now, this, I'm not trying to show XML, but .NET has some great XML capabilities.
You're not in the wire.
And I was able to pull out these values with simple select single node statements from the XML using XPath expressions. It's way easier than opening up a SAX parser and parsing through the whole document. So if you just need a few values from a returned XML, I highly recommend the .NET methods. So this is very little code. We gave it a pretty bad address and got back a much nicer one. I don't know if you noticed that. Next demo of web client. This calls a Google API to get back a static map. It's different than the previous ones in the way that I'm building the API. I'm adding things to the query string instead of assembling it as text. It's much cleaner. I'm using HTTP utility URL encode to be safe in case the address has unsafe characters. The rest of these don't need it because I know what I'm sending it. And we're going to get back a map of us. And you can try to spot your car in the parking lot. Yes.
Oh no, I was just waving to myself.
Oh, okay. Let's see what we're doing on time.
I think maybe the wire.
We're doing pretty well.
May not be the wire.
Well.
There's the handheld line. Do you want to use that?
I know, but I'm kind of using my keyboard.
You should be able to bring it.
Well, let's try it a little longer. I was gonna skip some of the web client demos because they take too long, but we're doing pretty well on time. This one does SOAP. I assembled this SOAP response by using a tool called SOAP UI to figure out what I needed to send. Then I figured out once I knew what I needed to send, I'm using the web client to assemble the XML. You have to add a couple of headers. This web service needed this header. I'm setting the base address of the service, an XML document. Using upload string, which is another method on the web client that does a post. If post is the default, I'm specifying it. And I'm loading the XML, and then I'm using the XML stuff to get back the values. So I'm going to run it real quick. And you can see we get back a lot of stuff, and it doesn't look like I'm showing it all, but it doesn't really matter. You can assume it works. What's interesting in this demo, and you're probably going to want to read through it, is that when you get back an error, you don't get back the SOAP error in your response. You just get back a pure error. There is a way of getting to that error by going after the error that you got back from .NET, finding there's a web request, an HTTP web response, I believe, inside the error, and you have to do things with that. It shows a little bit of how to do that in this code, but I don't really want to demo it. But it gets a little trickier when you have to do that. The fourth demo deals with encoding. If you're in a UTF client, all of this is generally really easy if your CP internal is UTF-8. If it's not, you have to work around a lot of things that Progress will do for you. When you get back data and you're not in a UTF-8 client, Progress won't preserve it properly when you try to assign it to a variable. There are, the workaround for that is to do binary-style downloads, use some of the methods I showed earlier for converting to a mem pointer and getting it into a long char of the proper code page directly, avoiding it ever getting into Progress's memory where the encoding will get munged up. I don't think I'll even run this for time. It doesn't really show that much. It's definitely worth reading through, though. Let's see. Next on the demo. I don't know how many of you use Exchange and Office, and I was playing around, and they have something called the Web Services API, which is web services are available to an Exchange server, but then they have an API, which is .NET, that completely shields you from the web services side of things. You don't know there's XML involved. You don't know that there's a web service involved. You're calling methods and getting back data. I'm setting a couple of date times. I'm creating an Exchange service. I'm setting my credentials to use my default credentials. I'm auto-discovering the URL, which is really slow. Don't use this except when you're developing. I'm creating a message body, I'm creating an appointment, I'm assigning the body type, I'm assigning some text, some subject values, and then I'm sending it, and assuming I'm still on the internet, this may actually work. This happens when you're not on the network, auto-discovers. But without, this doesn't require Outlook. We're talking to Exchange directly. And it, well, it usually works for me. It's a demo. Something has to fail. Maybe this will be the last one.
Does that work with any Exchange, just local Exchange server, or if you're hosted Office 365?
I haven't used it against Office 365. I assume it works. I use it against our corporate Exchange server, and it works fine. I'm not sure. I haven't used this a lot. You can also do mail. Almost anything you can do with Exchange, this API, which you do have to download, it didn't come in .NET, you need to download this Exchange Web Services Managed API. Install it and put it references in your assemblies file, and then you can use it. And it's very powerful. It appears that you can do just about anything that Outlook can do. Well, you can't print. You can't do the things that are part of the client. But exchanging data, creating data, you can do anything.
Be able to parse out like body and attachments and store them to the file.
Absolutely.
Oh man, that's awesome.
There may be easier ways to do that if you just want to go in through POP.
Okay.
But if your Outlook server supports it, or is it SMTP? I always get them mixed up, which is which, outgoing and incoming. But yes, you can.
Cool.
Okay, compression. I talked a little bit about a compression utility. Sometimes you have to store really big compressible stuff in your database. XML is a prime example I can think of where it's big, it's ugly, and this demo loads a 9 megabyte XML file into a mem pointer, then uses that, it actually copies it to another mem pointer, and then uses that to write to the database after, with compression and without compression. And then it does the same thing to read from the database. Now, it's a little slower the first time, so this is unfairly penalizing the one without compression. So we'll run it twice. And there we are. This is the sports database with a blob field added to the customer table. We'll run it one more time and get a much more realistic timing. Okay, about 6 seconds. The compressed version, about 1.5 seconds. Reading it, 1/4 second. Reading the compressed data, slower. So what you gain on the save, you lose on the read to some extent. This is using the sports database. There's no AI running. It's not over a large network. You may find your performance differences are even more significant than what I'm showing in the real world. I don't think I'll go deeply into this code because it's not that interesting. It uses those methods. It's really pretty easy. You're going to all get the code. I'd like to show some more stuff. Images. I find we end up doing a lot of work with images because we support a website that our application lets people put in the images for what will go out to the website, and then we generally create static pages. This is not a WebSpeed app, the website, but we have to give them all the images. And they want the images in different thumbnail sizes. They may want it in an original size, particular sizes. So we're taking, we're storing images in the database and putting them out in various forms. There's a image util class that I provided that this demo is using. And you'll want to see what that does. This demo, let's see, what does it do? It copies a file off the disk into the blob field in the first customer. It deletes a folder, it creates a folder, so I'm starting from scratch. It instantiates the class I'm using for the demo. It pulls the image out of the blob field using an image from buffer method that I provided in that class, so there's no temp, there's no copy lob to the file system, read back in from the file system. It then uses some methods in that class which aren't really as exciting as they might look, but it's saving as JPEG in three different qualities, in a smaller size. It's putting the image back in the buffer using the method, not that there's much point. I also showed her you can put an image into the clipboard very easily if you have a .NET image. I also, there's a capture screen written into the image util, so you can capture your screens. And then we're opening up the folder where most of this took place. And we have five different images. These are three different quality. You can see by the size that the size changed a lot. That's the really tiny one. That's the screen capture. You can't really see the quality difference that well on the screen now, but believe me, there is one. So that's, whoops, did I just close that? I'm still in.
Top right, red X.
Oh, yes. Okay, so a couple of failures during the demo. Boy, we're really doing well with time. I wasn't expecting to be able to show this. I was going through all the weird stuff you get from .NET, and I happened to notice that they have a C# compiler and a VB compiler, and they're all there as .NET classes. So I wrote a C# compiler in progress. One of the more useless things I've ever done. But anyway, if we load some C# code into here, which I have something here, this is the smallest one, your basic hello world, and I'm going to change it to hello pug world, and I press compile as exe and press the compile button and run after compile, and I'm going to name it foo and save it. We have an executable that I just ran that I compiled from C#. Is there any practical use for this? Probably not.
Can't think of one, but there probably is a practical
use. Yeah, maybe. It's you don't want to do this. There's no syntax checking. There's no easy way to add references. Those are all done inside the code. I mean, I can show you the code, but it's much simpler than you might expect. Where's the code that actually does the stuff? Here we are. So we're creating a set of compiler parameters. We're creating a code provider from these classes. We're naming the output assembly. These are references I needed to add to compile the various things I've tested with. This is one of those things you do if you're in Visual Studio. You have to add references before a lot of code can be built and compiled. And under the covers, I assume they're doing something like this. I don't have any insight into what their program does. We're looking at the input value from the editor. We're compiling it from source. We're checking for compiler errors. That's about it. If I run it, and let's bring in a larger program. This is something that creates QR barcodes that I found on the internet, and I made it compile. I didn't use this compiler to do it, I assure you. But if I put in some garbage and compile this, and this I would want to compile as a DLL, and I give it a name. Oh, I should have done the check syntax. So anyway, there's check syntax. It gives me errors. No errors. So it really is probably completely useless, but enjoy if you want to. I was very surprised to see that there. I was like, that's pretty cool. They, you know, eating their own, you know. Questions? Yes? I couldn't hear that.
Is it setting runs on Windows?
Only Windows, yes.
I'm sure I'll find the answer to this when I see the code, but is there a reason why the for each include file is not a session method?
I don't know what you mean.
Well,
you mean why I wouldn't have written a class to deal with it?
Yeah.
Because it defines classes. It defines variables as certain types, which are part of what you pass.
Okay.
Would there have been a way to do that? I'm not sure. But a session method, you still have to do something.
No, yeah. But
so where would what would your block structure be?
I'd have to look at the
I mean, this is the actual include. It's not really that long.
Oh, okay.
But it does things with an object in .NET called an enumerator.
I see.
And that's how it manages to go through things. But it also defines classes. It defines that name I gave it for the object we're going to do our work with. It has to define and be available for you to use.
But we could do that dynamically as well as an input. Right?
It's an interesting idea. I haven't pursued that.
The reason I ask is because I'm kind of against any business logic at all being in any include file anywhere. So.
Well, I would don't know if I'd call this business logic, but...
Well, it does something.
It does do something, absolutely. Well, you can type out, you know, you can define your variable and get an enumerator object against the variable and loop through your enumerator in code. You don't need to use an include. It's just easier.
Yeah.
Yes.
But you're on this one. This just starts the do loop.
Right, you have to finish the do loop.
And your business-specific logic will always... It won't be within the include file because this just opens the block.
Right. For which system? Which emulator?
It emulates Windows under Linux. Have you tried?
I haven't tried, but if it's actually running the Windows OS, which I suspect it has to, in other words, you have to load a copy of Windows, right? It'll probably work. I mean, you don't just get Windows. You get a VM of some sort under Linux and then probably are loading Windows. That should work. It's just Windows at that point.
Which different versions of the .NET framework would it does progress support right now? Is it, how far, how early does it
11
go?
Supports up to 4.5, but I think it goes back to 3.5, I think. I don't, somebody, what Windows, what .NET does it? What, which one?
Way back to
2.0, okay. You know, every machine I'm on has 4.5. You can't use 4.5 until some version of 11, I think. Or maybe, I know you couldn't in 10. You couldn't use .NET 4. Or anything above in 10.2, I think. But I don't know when that got suddenly supported.
Some issues using classes kind of system object. That's because they're multi-threaded.
Yes, progress is single-threaded. What I've run into is you'll sometimes find classes that have methods with the word async in them. Don't use them. Progress will tell you right at compile time, generally, if you try to do something that's going to try to start another thread. But you know, that's a limitation of progress. We run into it in our interface design. I mean, you can't run a decent progress bar if you've called something on the app server. I did write something that calls a separate progress and embeds the window inside, but that's kind of cheating. there was multi-threading was mentioned in the 4GL info session yesterday. I don't really need it, if somebody from Progress is listening, I don't really need it for performance and getting other things done. I just need it because there's all kinds of interface things that need another thread. I can't have the system completely frozen while an app server is off retrieving data. I don't know if there would be any kind of compromise Progress could do to, you know, somehow or other get just that one extra thread needed. I don't know, something much more rigid than full multi-threading might be. But it's commonly needed in the interface, not so that I can run 19 things all in the background and try to track them all.
Can't you use an async request for that?
Not in Progress.
No?
Oh, an async app server request.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they fixed this. You can't pass a data set to an async app server. And they haven't ever fixed it. It's been true since data sets came out. So it makes it almost useless.
Well, hopefully you're now passing your data sets as XML or JSON, regardless of the client.
You know, you have a point there, and if I were redesigning a lot of things, that might be the way everything would work. But meanwhile, back in reality,
yes.
Passing apps, data sets, and temp tables around is very useful.
Mm-hmm. So, do you guys use anything in the other parts of Microsoft Office, either Word or Excel? Any of the methods?
I have done a little bit with COMInterop and been very frustrated by it.
Okay.
With Excel, there are arrays that have to be passed to properties to get them back that you can't do in Progress. I don't know what other limitations I ran into. I don't think I ever got events to work right, but that was probably just me. And I've done a couple of little things. I did one with Exchange, with Outlook recently, that I used it because I didn't need events. And I like doing it. It's easier than working with COM because you get the better syntax checking and code completion and all of that. But I tried changing a couple of Excel things we do and gave up.
You tried using Infragistics control?
We use Infragistics controls.
They have an Excel.
Yeah, but it doesn't do what I want to do. Yeah, it's very useful for the Infragistics side of it, but we're doing stuff that it doesn't do.
You don't need Excel on the box.
Is that? I didn't know that. That's interesting. Any other questions? Cool. I guess we're done. There will be a copy posted on the Pug Challenge website. Thank you.